I heartily endorse this event or product.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we say goodbye to a shoe. I am one of your hosts, creamed eel fan Bob Mackey, and this is our Season 8 wrap-up special. Who is here with me today?
I'm Henry Gilbert, and I'm still waiting for us to get to the fireworks factory.
It'll be in Season 9, don't worry, I think. But yes, welcome to our season wrap-up special. If you're new to the Patreon, we do one of these for, I think we've done one for every season but Season 1 so far.
Yes, indeed, yeah. We did do that.
And we sort of go over the news from this year, the awards the show's won, commercials from The Simpsons, and our personal bests and least favorite episodes and characters.
Yeah, it was, Season 8 was an interesting time for the show. I think for the last like four seasons we would have a conversation of, is this the best season? I don't think we're gonna have that one this time.
Yeah,
but the highs on this are still so high, even if there's a few lows in this season.
I would say there are more lows than seven.
Yes.
And it's like a tight race between six and seven as my favorites. I think six is the stronger one, just because of I don't know why. I like the edge of six.
Yeah, I like the edge of six too. And also a thing you pointed out about six is that it's the most balance between Dave Merkin's insanity and violence with Bill and Josh coming into their own as storytellers who are getting more and more power on the show and balancing it out to also more humanly specific weirdness. Mm-hmm. So it had more of an interesting balance. Well, meanwhile, this one, I do see a little bit of what's coming in Season 9 in this. Like, you can see more of the family stuff that starts coming back in, more of the kid stuff, definitely.
Yeah, definitely a lot of the kid stuff that Mike Scully would be doing a lot of in his seasons.
Yeah, he Mike Scully and his kids, he loves his kids. I just saw him retweeting one of his daughters today on Twitter, and it was very funny, which also made me think, like, wait, it was a joke about having divorced parents, which then made me go, like, oh, did he get divorced? I didn't know this about Mike Scully.
We're not here to sling dirt about Scully. He's one of our good friends.
He is. I like Mike Scully. As a person, he's one of the nicest people we've interviewed, and as a creator, he's really good. Look, we'll talk about him when that time comes.
He's really funny on Twitter. Follow him on Twitter.
Oh my goodness, yeah. But this season, it was Bill and Josh's second year. All they wanted to do was 2 years. As Bill revealed to us in like one of our first interviews with him, they only negotiated to do 1 year at first and then decided to do a second. And I think once they were done with the second, they must have been like just so exhausted.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to those interviews, I think one of the questions I asked was, what ideas didn't you use? And he basically said, we used all of the ideas. And yeah, they were like half-formed ideas, like Bart and like the gross of army jeeps or whatever, things like that. But they basically use all of their ideas.
Yeah, and some episodes that Bill and Josh oversaw, I think, felt a little lighter this season because they'd done everything they'd wanted to do. So they're like, what else did we want to do? Like, the Lisa in the military could do that. Mm-hmm. Like, and this season also is where they got far more, like, even more daring and meta and weird, and I love that about it.
Breaking the show a little more in a good way, in a positive way.
Ruining the show, as some would say. Not us.
Certainly not.
Not us, no. The writers of Zombie Simpsons, yes, they would say that. But, and I mean, this also, talking about Season 8, with all of our wonderful guests we had this year, I think the specter of Armin Tamzarian casts such a long shadow on the season. Even though it's a Season 9, it's Production 8.
Yeah.
It's Season 9. But I feel like we talked about Armin Tamzarian in like half the episodes
of this
season.
It comes up every like third episode that we do. Even in the past, it was just like, again, we're about to do our live show of that episode soon in San Francisco. I'm really looking forward to us being past that because I think people assume we're going to like disappear from the world after we cover that and realize our life is a lie and delete the Patreon and start begging for crumbs down at the box factory. But we will survive, and I think we're gonna have some fun opinions about that episode when we do the live show, for sure.
Definitely. And well, actually, I guess by the time you're listening to this might be in the past for you, but I'm really looking forward to that live show as well. But the season of our podcast was so much fun.
We had
so many amazing guests on. Everyone was great. I don't want to spotlight too many people to feel like that I'm saying, well, if I didn't say your name, then you suck. but because they were all amazing. I did very much love that we were able to do Ian, Rebecca, and Toby for Poochie. That's one of my favorite podcasts I've ever recorded.
Yeah, and the Chapo Trap House Boys came back for Homer's Enemy.
Yes, yeah, that was so great. I love talking about Burlesque with Kate Leth. It almost rhymes. She was great. Talking with Matt Burnett, the co-creator of Craig of the Creek, about A Date with Density. There were like so many awesome episodes this season.
Yeah, the Michael and Us guys came on for two different episodes.
Back-to-back episodes. And Nima Shirazi for the Springfield Files. Tons of great episodes again. Thanks so much to all of our guests this season of the show. And I think that we got even more in depth. Oh, and this season too, we did the Halloween special with Bill Oakley.
Yeah, how could we forget that? That's on the Patreon too. We did that special. I think we did the special like 8 times, so we kind of want to forget about it. I don't want to see the episode ever again.
But it was so much fun to do with Bill Oakley. We got more revelations just when you think every secret has been revealed about The Simpsons. Bill Oakley tells us some more of them.
And I can't believe season 8 was only like 6 months out of the year because, you know, there's 25 episodes, but it felt like all of 20. I forget about even doing season 7 in 2018.
Right. Yeah. Like we must have started recording season 8 like on that July trip to LA, our first LA podcast like trip.
Hurricane Nettie, that date with Density, things. Yeah, definitely the very beginning of season 8.
Yeah, the Milhouse Divided. And that was also when we rode the Simpsons ride together. That was a fun day. We did that twice.
I was very sick.
Well, you didn't let it on. You were
one of many illnesses of 2018.
Yes, you can also measure Bob by the illnesses.
I'm normally not this sick. I don't know what's going on with me.
Oh, and I think, yeah, twice in season 8, we had on Nina Matsumoto. She was amazing, too. Gave us, I think, one of my favorite moments of the podcast this season 8 was going over the Japanese titles relocalized into English.
She always has something like that in her pocket that is surprising that she springs on us.
Yeah, that was, and also just all of the sideshow bobbing around here, like, oh, really?
Yes, we couldn't stop talking. Like, I was getting lightheaded during that episode just from talking. You use your diaphragm a lot. It's a lot of work. That's why Kelsey Grammer's in great shape.
It's true. It's why he works so hard to be such a great actor as Dr. Fraser Boss. Sorry, I'm just stealing that from John Daly on Comedy Bang
Bang. I forgot he was on that show called The Boss or whatever.
Yes, right? The Boss.
The one is like one season. Who cares?
His most recent thing, well, he's also like, what was he in recently? I forget it. But what a season. And why don't we talk about the news that happened during the airing of this season?
So 96, 97.
This is from the summer of 1996 to the end of summer of 1997. That's the year we're looking at here news-wise. So first off, video games, the most important thing. This was the beginning of a very dark age for The Simpsons and video games. Other than Virtual Springfield, no other Simpsons game came out during season 8, and none will come out for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
There won't be a Simpsons video game for the next 3 years.
I feel like someone realized these aren't very good. Let's not do this anymore.
It's a mix of things. It's that they were never very good, but now their audience wasn't buying video games anymore anyway. And I wonder, too, if they saw that Virtual Springfield cost so much more money with all of the licensing and actors and everything, but could only be sold on a PC, so it sold less.
Yeah.
I would think all of those things added up to, this isn't worth it.
And the idea of, how do we make these characters work in a 3D game with very low polygon character models? Like, I feel like they just weren't up for that challenge. Let's not do this at all. And then, like, PS2 is when they started doing Simpsons games again.
Cell shading hadn't been invented yet in video games, which the Simpsons needed to exist. I think the next one is Konami's Simpsons Bowling for the arcade.
Yeah, 2000 was the next game, and I've never played that game.
No, me
neither. I've seen it, though.
Yeah, I'd play it over Simpsons Wrestling, probably.
It's got one of those trackballs that's designed to rip the skin off your hand.
Oh, God. Yeah. No. But Virtual Springfield, the game, was a good... I had a good time with it. It's also been the break music for multiple episodes of the podcast.
That's right. And a rare Phil Hartman appearance you might not have heard before. And you can watch an entire playthrough on YouTube.
Yes.
I mean, that's basically the same as playing the game.
You basically get 3 hours of... 2 to 3 hours of content, I'd say.
Maybe an hour. But if you want a better Virtual Springfield, just watch the DVD menus. It's the same thing. thing.
They're the same thing.
Yeah, yes. But with actual animation from the artists on the show.
And if you'd like to hear more of the behind the scenes on how Virtual Springfield came together and how Fox Interactive decided to start publishing their own Simpsons games, listen to our long ago interview with Paul Provenzano, who was the executive producer on those games. And I think that also, my vision of the corporate reality of it was that, like, Fox didn't like sharing money with publishers. And then when they found out how much it cost to make a game, then they publish it themselves. They then said they didn't want to do that either. So
it's Fox Interactive or whatever was Virtual Springfield.
Yes, right? Yeah. Fox took it back under their umbrella. This happens every time where these people who license their games, Disney Interactive is another example of this. They license their games to THQ. They see THQ sells 8 billion copies of a Cars game. It's like, we should be making Cars games. That should be all our money. And then when they do it, they're like, This is hard and costs a lot of money up front. And we have to employ lots of people for a long period of time.
I talked about the Fox Interactive X-Files game for an episode of Retronauts. It was about games based on TV shows, and it was sort of like Mulder and Scully will show up, but they won't be saying anything or doing anything, and you're a new agent.
They only had so much time with Mulder and Scully on the set those days, which I feel for them too. It's like, oh no, this is a non-union gig of just stay in your same costume. We're going to film you on the same sets. Like, I know you just filmed since 4 a.m., but hey, this video game needs you to blink. And
But they're in beautiful Vancouver.
Nothing looks more pretty. And so then we have Virtual Springfield only video game. Other news. So I usually just plumb the depths of Variety archives to see what news related to The Simpsons happened during the season. Not a ton directly about The Simpsons, but for example, at the start of January, the day before King of the Hill debuts next to the Springfield Files, Warner and for the WB announces they're going to be doing their first primetime animated show, which is a show called Invasion by Steven Spielberg.
Which is
an action show. And
well, did it end up being called Invasion USA or something like that?
That's right, Invasion USA.
Or I think a Mystery Science Theater movie, maybe.
I think it's both, actually. Invasion USA has been called a lot of things. But was Warner was starting to get interested in it. I mean, they had been airing Pinky and the Brain and Freakazoid at night to see what it would do, but they wanted to do more adult stuff, and only Steven Spielberg could sell a grown-up action primetime animated series to a channel, and even then, they only got one season of it.
And that was just as he was leaving the world of animation. He was only in it for like 6 or 7 years.
Yes, yeah, and this was one of his DreamWorks things instead of his Warner things. So when we talk about what ended the golden age of 90s animation, DreamWorks is part of it, because a lot of the people who were doing it at Warner and Disney for television, they left for DreamWorks, and then both Disney and Warner, out of punishment and anger of having the DreamWorks took away all these people, they just quit doing those shows.
So it was Shrek and Pokemon that ruined the animation renaissance.
Absolutely.
Yep. Damn. Smash Mouth too. Let's blame them.
So in February 1997, Film Roman, the production company that still makes Simpsons to this day, the animation production company, they are looking for a new business partner to prevent themselves from falling into bankruptcy after the failures of two celeb-driven children's cartoon shows.
Let me try to guess what they are. What is one? Bruno the Kid.
It is Bruno the Kid.
Damn.
Yes. Yep.
I want to say Life with Louie.
That's the right network.
I want to say that was successful.
It was successful. Yes.
But yeah. So Bruno the Kid. Well, it was a Fox show, celebrity driven.
Mm-hmm. Only Saturdays, so they
only
didn't
Saturdays.
They only produced 13 episode seasons.
Help me out here.
It is about rapping.
Oh Jesus! Really? Okay, give me the answer.
C. Behringer.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Okay, yeah.
You don't immediately think of it as celeb driven, but it was the Tone Loc show.
It can't be Hammerman, but yeah, C. Behringer Jamal. Man, what were they doing?
They thought that, well, they had a fancy celebrity telling them they could do an awesome show.
In Tone Loc's voice, I would listen to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was in every cartoon for a few years there. What's happening with him? He should be in more cartoons.
Yeah, he's got the perfect cartoon voice.
I mean, him as the lizard in Ferngully, he steals the show.
Oh, he is the lizard. Yeah.
All right, so 1997, Steve Tompkins signs an overall deal with Fox to make a pilot about a psychic profiler, and I don't know if that even got filmed. Yes.
Well, we learned from talking to Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, or at least, I don't know if we heard this from them or some commentaries. Listen, we do a lot over here, but Steve Tompkins is sort of like the secret MVP of their season. It's just like all the best jokes you see on the screen are from him, and he was only credited with one episode. Was that a Milhouse Divided? Or
yes, yeah, he's often only. I mean, he also is credited on some of the, you know, spinoff Showcase or Halloween things,
like segmenty things.
Yeah, yeah, segmenty stuff. But
Alice Tompkins from The Critic is named after him.
that's right.
Yeah, and also a practicing Christian.
Oh, wow.
The only writer that they knew of that was a practicing Christian.
Well, the Tompkins, too, him signing that deal, I think that in April 97, I wonder if that's why he wrote less, too, because he was trying to get off staff at The Simpsons. Yeah. And I mean, who wouldn't want to start making their own TV show? And though it's also interesting that he got that with Judd Apatow. So he's producing it with Judd Apatow. That's also an interesting aspect of it, because Judd Apatow in April 1997 is not Judd Apatow now, or even Judd Apatow 10 years ago. This is pre-Freaks and Geeks Judd Apatow. Okay. Just the guy who is constantly pitching TV shows and can't get them made.
Another Critic writer.
Yes, yeah. I bet that's where their friendship began, perhaps. Since, Tompkins is a Harvard guy.
Apatow's not Harvard, is he?
No,
I didn't think so.
No, I mean, he's definitely a connected Hollywood guy.
They wouldn't let a guy named Judd into Harvard.
No way.
Oh, really, Judd?
All right, so July 2nd in 1997 sees the news that Oakley and Weinstein have signed a 2-year development deal with Castle Rock. And that will lead in 2 years to Mission Hill.
Ooh, yes. Mission Hill would premiere in what? 99?
It will premiere in 99.
All two episodes would air.
So, yeah, they signed the deal in July 2nd, 1997, which means They are technically Castle Rock employees when they're finishing the final touches on the airing versions of their season 8 episodes in season 9.
And Castle Rock, was that like Seinfeld producing?
Yeah, it was Seinfeld.
Yeah, it's a big, they were big shots coming off of The Simpsons.
Technically.
They're still big shots to me.
Oh, they 100% are. And if you want to be technical about it, they also worked with Steve Bannon.
Oh, man. Oakley got those Bannon bucks.
Well, he made Bannon money, too. Like
I think Mission Hill lost Bannon money.
But. Yeah. So, hey, that's a good thing about another quality about Mission Hill. Now, this, I don't mean to smear our good friends, Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, with this.
It's all in good fun.
Everyone worked with Steve Bannon. If you touched the Jerry Seinfeld, if you touched Seinfeld, you worked with Steve Bannon. Like, Carl Reiner, who is... Rob Reiner, who is like Mr. Russiagate these days, he was a long-term business partner with Steve Bannon on Castle Rock Entertainment. Like, that's just how, it's money, guys. Money poisons everything. Anyway, and at some point in 1996 or very early 1997, Mike Scully is named the new showrunner of The Simpsons. Mm. Because for the shows to begin airing in September, I'd say at the very least he became showrunner like January at the very latest, probably more like December or November.
Right, and we were told that it could have been David Cohen, but David Cohen was busy developing Futurama with Matt Groening.
Yes, meanwhile, in 1996 and 97, Cohen is working on some go nowhere sci-fi project with Matt Groening that I'm sure will not happen. Of course, Cohen is developing it with Matt Groening after Matt Groening created it. Certainly, David Cohen is not a creator of the show.
No, he doesn't get that money. But I mean, I love season 9 and I can't wait to do it, but I want to go to the alternate timeline in which David Cohen runs seasons 9 and 10 just to see what they look like.
Yeah, because Dan Graney, I think, put it, I love how he says it, that he de-Harvard-fied the show.
Yeah.
Which we make fun of Harvard a lot on this show, but I like the nerdy, hyper-meta commentariness of it, and that is what Scully turns away from. Scully is much more into a shocking gag or like a whoa kind of moment than talking about how television production and postmodernism affects the show. which, yeah, I do wonder what Cohen would have overseen. And it's also funny to know that the Cohen episodes written in season in the upcoming season are being written as he is coming up with Futurama with Matt Groening and the rest of the Matt Groening crew, including another great interview we had this during season 8 was Bill Morrison.
Yeah, yeah.
He revealed so much to us I never knew about the development of Futurama.
Also a secret creator of Futurama.
Yeah, honestly, he developed it as much as anyone. I think he is far too modest about what he did for Futurama. If you love the designs of Futurama, a lot of that's Bill Morrison, at least of the, like, any character that appeared in season 1. Like, it sounded more like Matt Groening said, no, something like this. And then Bill Morrison drew it.
Hey, Bill, can you create Bender?
Oh, sure thing. Hey, thanks. Anyway, go back to drawing comic books for $20,000 a year.
Bye-bye.
This is all my money on the future, on the Bender bucks. And I don't want to be, okay, who knows how much money he's making. All right, but so that's it news-wise for season 8. And then when it comes to awards, it was an interesting year where they learned their lesson from season 7 about what episode to submit.
Yeah.
Because in season 7, they submitted the Treehouse because they thought Homer Cubed looked so awesome that the Emmy people would have to give it to him. They'd have to. They did not. And though I also think it was maybe they were just tired of giving it outstanding animated program to The Simpsons over and over again. But
I wonder if it won like a technical Emmy or one of those weird Emmys that they don't advertise or show on TV.
I mean, outstanding animated isn't on TV either.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's not aired either. But
Pinky and the Brain beat them that previous year, right?
Yes, yeah, with their Christmas special.
That is a really good episode of Pinky and the Brain. Also, I think it's a TMS one. It's very beautiful looking.
But this season, The Simpsons came back with both guns blazing on a very special episode with Homer's Phobia.
Right.
And that won Best Outstanding Outstanding Animated Program.
And recently on Twitter, Bill Oakley shared the fact that when he and Josh received their Emmys, they were credited for producing a World War I documentary for PBS. And they had to get their Emmys repaired. Like, and I was like, did you have to tell your guests your Emmys were in the shop when they asked for them? But I guess they held on to their World War I Emmys until their Simpsons Emmys showed up.
That's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
I love that they got them wrong. They got the wrong Emmys. And yeah, just to say, oh no, I'm an Emmy winner. It's in the shop.
Stupid Emmys are always in the shop.
They're mailing it back to us. I still think it's so funny that they thought in season 7, Gene and Reese did, that they'd get to, that they would submit their episode for a Bleeding Gums Murphy episode for Emmy that year. Like, come on.
I can't remember. Was that our most hated episode of season 7?
I believe it was. Yes. That wasn't a clip show.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, no. 138's way better than that.
Oh, yeah. 138's better than the Springfield. Sorry. Springfield. What's it called again? Bleeding Gums episode? Round Springfield.
Yeah. See, it's an even dumb title. It's hard to remember. We have really turned on Gene and Reese on this show. I feel bad, but that episode was so treacly. And I also wonder if they thought it would get submitted for an Emmy because they could push for James L. Brooks and Groening to submit that episode over the regular staff's episode.
Ooh, yeah, that too.
I wonder.
Weird politics.
Yeah, I don't. Now I'm just libeling people.
It was 25 years ago.
But also Emmy winner this year was Spring in Springfield. Ken Keeler won the Emmy for Best Original Song that year.
Oh, really good song, too.
One of the best. And I know, I believe this is the song that the Mr. Show... No, it was a different one. The Mr. Show guys were furious that one of their songs lost to a Simpsons song at the Emmys one year. Though they were also furious that in Variety Show they lost to fucking Dennis Miller doing Photo Funny.
Would it have been like the Ronnie Dobbs musical episode?
Yeah, yeah. Y'all are brutalizing me.
Yeah, because Jeepers Creepers was a bit earlier, like 95 or something.
Yeah, I think it was Y'all Are Brutalizing Me, which that would have been season 10 of Simpsons, I would think. But hey, then Bill Odenkirk just got employed by The Simpsons and Futurama anyway, and worked with Ken Keeler a lot. So that was those were the two Emmys they won. And then also in season 8, Homer's Phobia won the Annie Award for TV animation.
Ooh.
And won a GLAAD Award.
That's cool. Was there like some sort of Genesis Award or something like that? For we mentioned it on the Old Man and Lisa episode. I think it won a Genesis Award or one of those like
Genesis-like, but not Genesis.
Not that, but it made John Swartzwelder mad. I have one other kind of news anniversary type item that's Simpsons related if you want to hear it. I just thought of it now. Coming up in about 11 days, The Critic will be 25 years old.
Oh, whoa.
The first episode aired on January 26, 1994.
Wow.
And if you have not heard our The Critic series, Talking Critic, check it out. 23 episodes on our Patreon. We cover the entire run of The Critic, even the webisodes. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you're new to the Patreon, you would owe it to yourself to listen to all of those. Even the webisodes. I wish we didn't end on the worst things they ever did. But
and I think this the first episode of Talking Critic is just in the Simpsons feed.
Yes, yes it is. Maybe I should just upload that as its own Talking Critic thing. But then it appears at the front of the feed, and it's just it confuses kids furrowing their brows in vain attempts to understand the situation.
Oh, our patrons are better than that.
Yes, yes, yes. Sorry. You're all so smart. I apologize for that. All right, so that's the end of the news. What commercials aired for The Simpsons during season 8? Not a lot, according to the wiki and on the DVDs. On the DVDs, there aren't any included commercials because there weren't any Butterfinger ones this year. I think they maybe let their contract lapse, Butterfinger did. They'd renew it again in 1998, and that would last about another 3 years, and then they drop it again, and that's when Mike Scully could finally start making mean jokes about Butterfingers because they hated them. At the time, though, they could get all the free Butterfingers they wanted, and then as Bill Oakley revealed to us on the in our live show with him, that they would like throw them at each other and like make gross game. It sounds a little bunkhouse to me, I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, nothing could beat the immense power of the PB Max peanut butter bar.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Better than whatever that orange crap is, it's in a Butterfinger BB.
Yeah, I did not expect PB Max, such an obscure candy, to be Bill Oakley's favorite candy. But he is, I mean, Bill Oakley is a food expert now. He is, so that's what he's most famous for these days, honestly. He food expert who also worked on The Simpsons. That's our best friend Bill Oakley now. So no real American commercials at all. In France, there was a new Vizier commercial, which fortunately is not controversial at all, like the last year's laundry detergent one from France.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Oh, boy.
This one isn't weird like that. It's about them getting their clothes washed, and I only want to play a momentary clip of it because there's some okay casting in this, but French Homer sounds really good, I think.
Okay. La la, y'a le gras qui pue là. Oh, papa, tu es resplendissant. Je me sens tout désirable. Oh, it's great, yeah.
That was a really good... That was Lisa replying to him there. But
that's a great dub voice. Yeah. Getting the Homer-like doofiness. Like, I was... So, randomly on Facebook, random Simpsons streams just appear, and they're usually in different languages. And one was in... I think one was the Mexican version of the show. I don't like Homer. It's too gruff. It's, like, very, very gruff. It's not like... you need the goofy, like... I just call it, like, doofy. The doofiness of Homer's voice.
I remember Mike Reese talked about how, like, horrifying German Homer sounded to them.
This awful shouting man.
I really like that French Homer there in the Vizier ad, which was not at all troubling, fortunately. I wonder if Vizier canceled their membership with them because in the Treehouse episode that's coming up at the start of season 9, that is with Le Bon Neutron.
Oh, yeah.
with them being drawn to be literal frogs.
Yeah.
I stand by my ethnic slur. That's most politicians now, I think.
Oh, for sure.
I can't wait to talk about that one. But it wasn't just the France who did a Simpsons commercial this year. There was also the UK getting their own Doritos ad for Simpsons, which you're like, well, I guess Doritos of UK could afford Simpsons, but not Doritos of America.
I love crisps.
Presenting Doritos.
Be still, my pet. The hour is nigh.
Woohoo! Snack break!
They're tangy. They're tasty. They're food in the fast lane. Doritos.
I thought that was cute.
What's happening in that commercial? I'm not
it's
seeing.
It's Homer's lunch break, but he's in blue outer space. He's in another dimension, as they'd say on Mystery Science Theater.
Okay. Just to make things cheaper, I guess?
Yes.
No backgrounds?
No, it also seems to be done outside of the film Roman Machine. Yeah. It's a little off-model Homer, I'd say.
When they were doing the tagline for Doritos, which I've never heard that tagline.
I thought in the England.
I'm pretty sure. I thought they were just going to end with their food.
I think, too, that announcer talking over it. He sounds, I wonder if he is a real American or an Englishman affecting an American accent.
Oh, that always bothers me.
I love hearing it. It's fun to me. When I've heard British people do American accents, often they go to surfer guy, like, hey, man.
Or they hit the R's way too hard.
I'm sure they love when we do English accents often.
Mine is impeccable.
I'd never seen that Do Ritos one before. And they even
they
repeat the joke. Homer pats his belly like, patience, my pet, but he says a slightly different thing. So those are the only two season 8 era commercials I could find, except for in summer of 1996, Fox begins broadcasting Major League Baseball. It was a huge coup for Fox as the fourth network. They did not get real sports. When Fox started getting big in the early 90s, I believe it was that most of the major league sports in America were exclusive to the older networks. They had long-term contracts. So it wasn't until 96 that Fox could start negotiating and actually paying the huge amount of money it costs to license professional sports. They'd get NFL, I believe, the next year. This year, they got Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
They could not stop doing ads for it.
I remember this because primetime sports ruined Sunday nights for me. Mm. They always bled into all the shows. Some would be preempted, like Futurama, and some would just be delayed, like King of the Hill. Like Futurama, I think they hated Futurama, so like, hey, we got to show this football game. Sorry, Futurama,
sorry.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, well, and that was the curse, too, of being in the Eastern time zone when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
And you'd get it delayed the most. It's also what made the Oscars last until midnight most nights on the East Coast.
For a while, it was like Futurama 7, King of the Hill 7:30, and then Simpsons 8. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you might see King of the Hill.
I believe season 10 of King of the Hill broadcast over like over two years because they kept getting preempted that much. But it did lead to some new Simpsons content in summer of 1996 because Fox paid for them to produce several baseball moments from the Simpsons shorts that were about 20 to 30 seconds long that had some sort of baseball related joke or reference that the MLB would probably approve of and making jokes in the Simpsons-y style. So let's listen to a couple of these.
And now, a baseball moment from the Simpsons.
The World Series. If you don't watch this, you don't deserve to be an American.
Yes, it's like voting in next month's election.
What election?
And now, a baseball moment from the Simpsons.
Cal Ripken Jr. He played over 2,300 games and never missed a day. My hero.
Aren't you supposed to be at work?
I called in sick.
Okay, one more.
And now, a baseball moment from the Simpsons.
If you build it, they will come.
Huh? Well, where are they?
They went next door.
And then there's Flanders Field next door.
Oh, it's that makes sense.
A giant stadium for Flanders. Like, so my guess on these is that Al Jean and Mike Reiss were the main producers of it.
Because there's a film parody?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke. Did Al Jean and Mike Reiss ghostwrite that one?
That is my main tip off that I would... My guess would be that while they're working on their satellite office for the two episodes this season, that they were the one tasked with doing these baseball moments of The Simpsons while to keep the main staff free of it. And also, like, those were being told that Homer doesn't vote. That's a favorite of Gene and Reese era. Homer not going to work. That's a favorite of them, too. But especially that's a critic joke. Like, that's just a critic joke. And Flanders Field, that was a reference in a season 2 title of an episode, When Flanders Failed.
About a World War I battle.
Which, like, that I think says a lot, like... Bill and Josh would not make a Flanders Field reference. That's just not their wheelhouse of things.
I don't think they would also make a Field of Dreams reference 7 years after the movie came
Jesus
out.
Jesus Christ, no. That's so... I mean, maybe that was them aiming low. They're like, well, look, this is the MLB audience. Can't get too smart.
Fucking jockheads have seen this movie. It's got a baseball in it.
And then they just throw you a Cal Ripken fact. There's a couple other facts ones in there, too. There's only about six of them total. But the funniest one, actually, is a more visual actual one that I feel like I'm surprised that the MLB would have been okay with, where Homer is having a bunch of friends over to watch a Major League Baseball game without the express written consent of the Major League Baseball. And then a SWAT team comes in and points a ton of guns at them. I was like, oh, this is a little negative about the MLB.
That's kind of awesome. I like that.
That's one of the best jokes. And that's, you can watch them all. They're on YouTube. The baseball moments from The Simpsons. It also feels a little gross in the, you know, I could see too that Bill and Josh, my expectation would be that they didn't do this because they were the guys who didn't like the Critic crossover. And if they didn't like the Critic crossover, having Fox telling them, hey, we got baseball, do baseball jokes, they would be like, fuck you, we're artists, man.
I'm not selling out.
Well, meanwhile, hey, Gina Reese, like, sell out, please. Yeah. Yes. Like, I mean, if I was told to write a TGIF pilot or make baseball jokes about The Simpsons, I'd pick baseball jokes about The Simpsons.
Either write your sassy angel sitcom or your baseball promos.
But I mean, God, yeah, a Field of Dreams reference, really? Like, geez. Though these, you know, I think more about these baseball moments from The Simpsons. They're definitely precursors to the internet originals they've been doing for a while now.
Mm.
I also, boy, let's talk about a new Simpsons episodes real quick.
Oh, no.
One, they went back to New York again, which is funny because we have recorded now the next episode about New York, and then they went back to New York about 8 or 9 years ago, and now they've gone back to Times Square again. It's like, how many times are The Simpsons going to experience Times Square for the first time?
Yeah, I think I saw like a parody of the M&M store.
Yes, exactly.
In like a promo
and,
image.
And.
Oh, okay, good.
Very funny, very funny. And they also had, the newest episode got like a D+ on the AV Club. Their opinion was it was not very good.
The AV Club still reviews TV shows?
At least The Simpsons, yeah. And I only know about this because Yardley Smith quote tweeted and said, fuck this.
Like,
she was very hurt by it. It was a Lisa-centric episode,
aww,
so I can see why she maybe took it a little more personally. I think also Yardley Smith is a little new to Twitter and maybe doesn't know. It's like, come on, guys. It just looks bad. Even if you do think it's a bad review, even if it is a bad review, you should maybe just take it on the chin and be like, yeah, there's always negative reviews of your stuff.
Despite playing Sweet Lisa, Yardley is very sassy in real life, which I like.
She
has a murder podcast.
Yeah, I love that about her. She's awesome. But the new episode, what struck me about it, it's one where Lisa wants to move in with a different family, which I feel like has happened like 5 times. But what interests me most...
It's been 30 years.
So the couple she wants to move in with, who already has her own kid, they are a biracial couple, an African-American man and a white woman. And the woman is played by Patti LuPone, which, like, oh, that's some star casting there. And then the man is played by Kevin Michael Richardson, which I love Kevin Michael Richardson, but that feels like they would first go for a star and then like, well, we didn't get a star. Let's just go with Kevin Michael Richardson.
Or he did the temp track and they couldn't find a star maybe a star fell through.
Yeah, I would bet you that's it.
Yeah.
I bet you. But that's, I don't know. I haven't seen the episode. I'm just talking about the reactions to it. But and also, I love Kevin Michael Richardson. I was just talking about how much I love him on our Batman Brave and the Bold podcast. All right, so ratings. Bob, what do you think was the highest rated episode this season?
I'm almost positive it was The Springfield Files.
You are correct.
Yeah.
By a magnitude of about 3 million more than most episodes this season. And it totally is understandable. Like, it was so heavily promoted.
Yeah, and that's like the peak of X-Files mania.
Mm-hmm. And it would be the X-Files crossover, heavily promoted, with X-Files airing that same night.
And the lead into King of the Hill.
Yeah, premiere. And so they're already advertising a shitload of King of the Hill, too. So you just have all of this at once. All of this advertising at once. And that's also, now I know why, after we did King of the Hill and talking of the Hill, I now understand why they aired Sherry Bobbins the very next week on a Friday. It was so they could re-air King of the Hill and have another new episode of The Simpsons as the lead into re-airing the King of the Hill pilot so they could get more eyes on King of the Hill.
Very
again.
Smart. It worked. King of the Hill was a huge hit in the first 3 or 4 years.
And they advertised the shit out of Springfield Files. So it's not surprising. I do feel bad for Bill and Josh that in their season, the highest rated episode was a Gene and Reese one.
It was a stunt though. So I think they knew it was, we did the episode. It was fine. I think it was below par for the season, but It's just like Sherry Bob. So the guest characters show up and then they leave.
And then the episode ends in Act Two. Yeah, and Act Three is them figuring out, like, what the next is.
Looking at their watches and being like, let's sing a song.
What if we watch some TV for a while?
Ooh, how about these parodies?
I feel like this Death Wish parody is pretty spot on.
And timely.
Everybody's heard of Death Wish in 1997. All right, lowest rated. What do you think it is?
Oh, off the top of my head, I feel like it would be a fluke, like not related to the content of the show.
Pretty much, yes.
Let's say the Canine Mutiny.
You are close. It is in the back half of the season, but it was Mountain of Madness.
Really?
Yes.
That's a shame. That's one of the funniest episodes of the season.
I would agree, but yeah, it actually had less than half the viewers of Springfield Files. It was really low. I think it's the lowest rated of Bill and Josh's entire tenure on the show. 9.1 million viewers, which obviously anyone would kill for today. It would be the highest rated show on TV right now, but then 9.1 million, the lowest rated. And I don't really have a clue as to why, because I don't think there was any sports thing that was drawing things away. I looked at what aired on networks that same night and their ratings. Nothing really had high ratings that night. So I
like
don't
a new Mad About You was airing or something.
Yeah. And a new Lois and Clark, like not major stuff though at all. So I really don't understand why it was so low. And I thought, like, oh, is the Super Bowl against us? Like, nope, Super Bowl was over. It was, and I don't think Fox would bother airing a new Simpsons against a Super Bowl. So I can't understand why, but yes, Mountain of Madness, lowest rated episode of the season. For a season with no clip show, that kind of makes sense too. All right, so that's all the news. That's all the ratings, commercials, awards. I guess the last thing to get into for us is best and worst episode and the MVP of the season.
Ooh.
Do you want to start with best or worst?
I'll go with worst.
Okay.
I'll go with worst. Save the best for last. So this is probably going to be very obvious to most people listening, but I think the worst episode of the season is the season finale.
Oh, wow.
The Secret War of Lisa Simpson.
This is different for me, but I'm hearing you.
You've heard my thoughts on this recently, but again, it's like a very drab episode. It feels sort of like lifeless and in need of being punched up, but also it's at the end of a season when everyone is overworked and they just want to get this last one out the door and like take a break. And it's not just that it feels kind of lifeless. It's also in a very like drab and dull place for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending isn't very good. And I think like the emotional arc, I don't really buy it that much. So I feel like there are still funny things in the episode, and it's not like one of the worst episodes ever. But for season 8, it's definitely a low point for season 8. And I'm glad it came at the end. It wasn't like in the middle or something.
And it was about, from a feminist standpoint, and about a feminist news story. And then they kind of shy away from that a little bit. Certainly not as much as Bill and Josh interacted with feminist themes in Lisa versus Malibu Stacy, for instance.
Yeah, and Willem Dafoe does a good job, but his character does not even have a name. I think in season 8, so Bill and Josh said, the way The Simpsons should work is that you do two seasons as a showrunner. The first season kills you, but it's your best work. The second season is your lesser work because you're so burned out from that first season. And they were like, on the commentaries, they keep bringing up, there are two episodes from the season that we really don't like. We're not going to say which ones they are because we don't want to throw individual writers under the bus, but I feel like this is one of them.
I think so too. I would agree with that. I think also like the burnout, one thing I never really thought of this from a show running standpoint until ahead of our Rebecca Sugar podcast, I read her and Ian talking about making the show in the, I'm pointing at the book where it is on my shelf, but the Steven Universe art book. They talk a ton about production, and they talk about how energetic they felt when they started making the show, because they just had all the time to create and they weren't having to edit and make sure things were prepped for airing, where you were basically making two shows at once, the shows you were starting to draw and then the shows you were starting to edit from the footage you get back. That's the difference in animation. And so I think, you know, when you start writing season 7, you're only working on the writing and the production side of things. When you're writing season 8, you're editing season 7. And that would, of course, increase your workload exponentially.
That's a really good point. Yeah, you're not as focused on just the writing because you're also dividing your time between finishing old episodes and writing new ones.
And so by Secret War of Lisa Simpson, you're just looking at the door. You're like, Jesus Christ, I'm so close to being done.
I think at a certain point, too, Bill and Josh stopped working as much because it was killing them. Because they used to look at storyboards or have storyboards shipped to them on weekends to look at.
That's
and they're
right.
like, after season 7, we're like, we can't do this anymore. We have no life outside of work.
How dare they want to live lives?
And that's why season 7 was so good.
Yes. Instead, they should have been continuing to kill themselves for our enjoyment. It was selfish of them to stop doing that. Well, I do agree with you on all those points, Bob, but my least favorite episode of the season is Simpsons Califragilistic Expialidocious, Sherry Bobbins, as it were.
That's sort of like my number two.
It
because
is.
Because I think my expectations are set lower because of what it is.
Sure.
It's like a weird non-canonical episode that's not really trying to tell a story that makes sense. But I understand it's not, there's a lot of story problems, even though it's not trying to tell a story that makes sense still.
Yeah, I think so. The Sherry Bobbins episode, my biggest issue with it is just that it feels half baked. Like they don't really know what they want it to be. I said it on the episode too, like is this about the Simpsons version of Mary Poppins, or is this about a Mary Poppins who is ruined by the Simpsons?
Yeah.
When she sings Half-Ass Job, she is a Mary Poppins who believes the Simpsons way of half-assedness. But when she is saying, "You people will be the death of me," that's a regular-ass Mary Poppins saying, "I am being stretched thin by trying to help you people who I can't help." And it doesn't know even what they want Sherry Bobbins to be.
Yeah.
There's so many songs. Like, the songs are the best.
It's the best part of the episode, and they're all in my head. But they're hanging their head on too many songs, and what's between them is not great.
And that even when they have those songs, then they also depend very heavily. Like, they have a song from Hair in there, which is just like, you have so many songs in this. You're now also licensing songs.
Oh,
I
yeah.
mean, come on.
Two songs from Hair, and there are two episodes from the season.
Yes.
Gene and Reese.
And that the two episodes, and also too, they're watching a ton of TV in this episode, which is just, they're so listless and tired, all the Simpsons in this, that it kind of infects the show with a similar, like, TV.
Yeah.
Like, they're just tired, and they can't stop watching the television. Like, Lisa can barely engage with people in it even.
I think these episodes show you that, so Springfield Files and the Mary Poppins episode, I think it shows you what having a writing room does for an episode in which these episodes were four people. Gene and Reese, Reed Harrison, and Daniel Stern, I think, were the four people. And without going through the Simpsons writing room machine, a lot of things got through that normally wouldn't have gone through. Like, like, what is this Mary Poppins character? Like, what is she? What is the premise behind this episode? This is, like, I feel like more things would have been ironed out. There would have been a better told stories too.
And I think Mike Reese from the commentary sounded more disengaged with that episode. He's like, "I didn't want to do this one. I think it was weak." Everybody, and then he tries to compliment it too by saying, like, "Everybody says it's good, so I guess it's good." And then as they're watching it, Gene's like, "Yeah, boy, this is getting a little tired here in the third act." He's like, "I told you.
Yeah.
I told you this had story problems."
They're very, these episodes are very critique-y too, in which it's not like 7 and 8 have such strong, well-told stories. Very, very seldom there are B stories in season 7 and 8. And in these episodes, it's just like, we're going to like weave a story between all these parodies. And they're not as concerned as like, what is the through line? Does this make sense? Are the act breaks compelling? Like, it's just, they're just there for parody's sake.
After reading Mike Reese's book and then going into his personal, like, or his writing history, all the shows he worked on, like the Alf episodes he did and the Gary Shandling episodes they did, there are just so many direct film parodies that I think that is one of their like worst crutches that they lean on way too much. And I think it's something Gene even does to this day, the To Kill a Mockingbird episode. It's so much similar to what he did 30 fucking years ago on the Gary Shandling show.
Al Jean and Mike Reese, they started writing parodies at Harvard Lampoon.
Yeah.
Their first role in Hollywood was writing Airplane 2, Punch Up on Airplane 2. Like, they are born in the world of parodies, and I feel like they can never really fully escape parody.
Yeah, and I also get it from a script pitching and writing position of, like, if you're doing a film parody, you already have your structure right there. And I think it's like, well, so we have the structure of Mary Poppins or Cape Fear right here. If there's any holes in jokes, if we're like, oh, we're a little short here, then they watch TV. And if they watch TV, then they filled in the space. And I think it's fair to say that about Cape Fear and Sherry Bobbins, because Cape Fear is amazing.
Yeah.
One of the funniest Simpsons ever. But that's, like you said, the difference of a writer's room that can spackle in great jokes in this episode-length parody.
I mean, totally. Like, Cape Fear is a crazy episode. It's basically like a critic episode, and the plot makes no sense, and it's just a bunch of parodies of one movie. But, again, the machine makes it better, and they did not have that machine with their two episodes in the season.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why Sherry Bobbins is my least favorite, because it just bothered me the most watching it that I'm like, this is so half-baked. You don't have an ending to this episode. You're really supported by about 7 minutes of songs that it's like you had 7 minutes of songs supporting this and you still couldn't get three acts. Like, and then like also all those reused critic jokes.
Yeah.
Like the Andy Griffith Show one. Like, come on. Bill and Josh would have thrown that out the window the second they heard it. Here's my pitch, guys. Charles Bronson is Andy Griffith in the Andy Griffith Show.
No, throw it out.
You can just see the flop sweat on the person saying that.
We can see how little that Bill and Josh did parodies. Their style is so different.
Oh, yeah, very, very rare. Okay, so best episode of the season. I wonder if we say the same thing. I'll go first then.
I want to hear what yours is because I think I'll know.
The best episode is Poochie.
Okay.
I think the Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie show is one of the most like important episodes of television ever. As I said there, like it sums up hardcore fandom and animation production perfectly. And when I was getting the clips, I think it was the most clips I'd ever done on a podcast because I was like, well, no, that moment is one of the most heavily memed and referenced things ever. Oh, now the next scene is one of the most heavily referenced and memed things ever. Like the shadow it casts on fandoms of an entire generation is right there in that, just that episode. There's so many memes that I was just like, oh yeah, everybody talks about the fireworks factory. Everybody says worst episode ever. Everybody says Speedo Man and attitude.
Rossify,
all these things. And I need to go back to my home planet, like died on the way to his home planet.
Yeah.
All these jokes have just become part. It's hard to even judge them as like, are these still funny? Because they are just the air we breathe in commentary on media. And maybe it's also because it was my favorite one to record this season.
Yeah, that it could be.
It's making me like it even more in memory. But I do think it's like the funniest episode of the season. It made me laugh the most in returning to it.
Mine is going to be surprising. Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie changed the way we talked about TV and The Simpsons. Very important.
Yes.
You Only Move Twice. Very good high concept episode. It's James Bond meets, touchy-feely Silicon Valley entrepreneur. Very cool. Homer's Enemy possibly destroys The Simpsons.
Yes.
Another very high concept episode in which someone tries to challenge the reality of the show and is killed because of it. But for my favorite, I'm going with a non-high concept episode that's just very well told and character-based and just very strong and emotional, and that's going to be Springfield Confidential. My favorite episode of the season. That is my favorite episode of the season. It's because I love Skinner, and I think on this episode they learned a lesson that they didn't learn in A Milhouse Divided, in which we can tell a story about two characters without having Homer like jump in and throw a party. You know, like Homer says three things in this episode.
And even Bart is an accessory to their story, but it's their story. Edna and Seymour is not Bart's.
It's a very sweet story about two losers who find each other. And I think it's very sweet. And it's great. It's like, it's such a well-told story. It's written by a woman too, which is also very helpful in telling an emotional story based on a relationship.
And directed by a woman too.
Yeah, and it started off one of my favorite sort of arcs in The Simpsons between Edna and Skinner before that was ruined. So
yes.
I feel like they were a good pair. They found new things to do with the characters, and Skinner was at his most Skinneriest. Like, Skinner in an Oakley and Weinstein episode is great. Just great to watch. And later, like, I think Scully would just humiliate Skinner constantly, and so would Al Jean and Mike Reese. But they had the most sympathy for this very boring Hank Hill style figure, and I love jokes about boring characters, so I'm giving it to Springfield Confidential.
It was the episode So Nice, we did it twice this season.
Yep.
Once on Everything's Coming Up Simpsons, and then once with Max Scovel. And that is a really great touching episode. I think as I grow up, I like it more too. But it's the sweetness of it is good, but it's not as funny.
I know.
So
that's why it's a secret number one. But I will say, I will give Mountain of Madness my special gag award. It's up there with the PTA disbands as just a bunch of really funny jokes hung around a very loosely told story. But it's very, very funny all throughout. So many good gags.
The correct answer is you.
One of my favorite jokes in that one is when the rocket cabin is coming down the hill and people are just like, the brakes aren't working. Get out of the way.
Out of the way.
Yeah, just like they're not blown away by the fact that a cabin is rocketing down the hill. They're just like, oh, its brakes must not be working.
And the deer head in the fireplace.
Yeah.
Also saying like, where's the ranger? Like, so many people. Shut up, you drunk. Where's the ranger?
Right here behind the drunk.
Behind the drunk chief. Yes. That does maybe have the most jokes packed per second.
You haven't been issued a map.
Thank you. Oh, great. It's the Bobbsey twins. God, and Burns' speech about cheating. There's so many great moments in it, yeah. And yeah, it's the least watch of the season.
Not fair.
All right, well, Bob, then I think I would know who your MVP of the season is based on that choice, perhaps.
I think, I'm going to say my MVP is based on an episode, and that'll be Ned.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, actually, okay. MVP is Harry Shearer for, doing a really good Skinner episode and a really good Ned episode. But Hurricane Nettie, definitely an amazing episode and one that, changes what you think about Ned Flanders.
Too bad it doesn't count. It doesn't count, that episode. No. It never is reflected again.
But it's so good, and Harry is so good. So Harry as Ned and Lovejoy and Skinner and three episodes about those characters this season, all super great, and they change the way you think about those characters in many different ways.
Is this the last season Harry Shearer tried?
Maybe.
I guess we'll keep an eye on him in season 9 to see how much he's trying then. But
Hurricane Nettie, peak performance from Harry Shearer.
Yeah, I mean, just his rants. Yes, I literally, dang, diddly, ding, dong, crap.
I can listen to that over, that entire long, telling everyone off scene is so good.
Good. Oh! Damn, that's a really good one. I will say Milhouse this season was my favorite because...
Why did I have the bowl, Bart?
Why did I have the bowl? Or also maybe he's going to pee in the river. Just one-off lines like that are useless for Milhouse, but so funny. And also there were two very character-defining episodes for him that show what Milhouse would pretty much transform into and remain for the rest of the series. You have Milhouse Divided, which sets up that he is the son of a failure father and that's what makes him so sad, which would already be echoed in Homer's Enemy when he says, well, at least I'm better off than Dad. And then you have the true introduction of his crush on Lisa, which will lead them into bad jokes sometimes. It is a very important part of his character to be this nerd who pines after the sister of his best friend and he'll never get her because you suck, Milhouse. Bother some other girl already.
And Kirk Van Houten became a breakout star in season 8. They discovered all the good Kirk jokes.
Let's get this party started.
Yeah. Let's break his door down and take his stuff. And the real good Kirk stuff first came out in 22 short films about Springfield.
Yes.
And then they're this character is great. Let's put him in something else.
That was...
After two spaghetti meals, that was the next... really good appearance.
That's when they truly knew they let Kirk.
Previously, Kirk's only line was "Get off our property."
I think in both those, so many of the characters that Bill and Josh elevated are just sad, boring men. Those are some of their favorite avatars of jokes.
It's the best. I mean, it's funny that they left and then King of the Hill started. So it's their brand of humor continued into something else.
Yeah, and that's not who. Those aren't the types of guys who were the favorite jokes of Scully in the Scully years. Scully was more into characters like Constant Harm and other weirdos who immediately this is flash forwarding into the
Gil.
Show. Gil, oh God, they love Gil, and just the suicidal tendencies of Mo. They built up that a lot, but and Duff Man just being wacky. I think too of like how quickly they sell out characters in the Scully season is summed up. They even Mike Scully called himself out on this on a commentary. But when Judge Constance Harm says, "You remind me when I was a little boy," and then Snake says, "Did she just say she was a dude?" Like,
yeah.
One little transphobic.
We're
going to
be
that.
Entering the era of transphobic jokes.
All men. Yeah. Yep. But it's not only a transphobic joke, but it's also them saying, like, they just sold out that character in their first episode.
Yeah.
Like, that's, they waited longer to make Lenny and Carl gay, for example. But
they resisted for so long.
But in this case, they're like, no, we're going to make a joke already that this character is just a crazy person or just weird. But that ill reality is in our future, our soon future.
And don't worry about us, folks. We're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Lots of great episodes to come.
I'm really looking forward to, if you look at the list of episodes in season 9, there's a lot of winners in there that also cause a lot of conversation, like Kids News. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I'm really, like, even when the episodes are going to be bad at sometimes, it's going to be fun digging into the references and just, like, what was happening in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
Stuff that we don't think about as often right now.
I think if you listen to our Sherry Bobbins one where we bag on the episode a whole lot, that was still, I think, a fun podcast. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun in season 9. We are not ending the show after Principal of the Pauper, people.
Yes.
Please, please stop saying
that. We still have
that.
30 more years to cover. Sorry, 20 or more years to cover. Yeah.
Yep,
21.
Yep, 21. Probably more like 23 by the end of it all. But we'll see. We'll see.
And before we go, we usually do a deleted scene special for every season that's still coming. We're in the middle of working on our live show right now and a lot of other stuff, so it'll be coming a bit later than normal. But still, in the month of January, you will receive that deleted scene special if you're a patron. And if you're not a patron, how are you listening to this?
Yeah, you better not have stolen it. Give us the money.
Yeah.
Come on.
The finger thing means the money.
The money.
But thanks for listening, folks. And we'll see you in maybe like 6 months for the season 9 wrap up. Please enjoy season 9. We're looking forward to it.
Woo! Wow, infotainment.